on air, online, on digital radio and television, and on the ABC Listen app.
It's the Tasmanian Country Hour, live and on location at Agfest. You're with Fiona Breen and Luke Redford on ABC Radio Hobart and ABC Northern Tasmania.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Country Hour at Agfest today, and another beauty, isn't it, Luke?
It is a magnificent day and a very good afternoon to you, whether you're here at Agfest or listening right across Tasmania. We've got a question for you today. What have you come looking for? Agriculture's looking pretty good in general, and you've got some wiggle room potentially to buy some new tech, or maybe you don't know what you're looking for.
A new tractor maybe, Luke.
Indeed, we'll hear more about the machinery shortage from Tasman coming up.
And we're going to look at safety, farm safety, something we all should consider, but we're going to have a bit of fun as well and talk about four-wheel driving and get some tips and tricks.
And of course, coming up at 12:30, the Weather Bureau live in action. You can come see us. We're at site M92, which is the corner of Main and 9th, and we'll be here till 1 p.m. First up today, lots of new faces, but a familiar face is here. Lachlan Bennett, my partner in crime, and ABC Burnie rural reporter. Good afternoon to you.
Hey Luke, great to be here at Agfest for another beautiful day.
And you've got another new face here with us. Could you introduce us?
I sure do. I have Laura Richardson. Now, she is the new executive officer of Dairy Tas. She took over the position in April, and I just want to know, what are your top priorities?
Hi, thanks for having me. Look, Lachlan, I think the dairy industry in Tasmania is in a pretty good place at the moment. We're seeing reasonable prices for our farmers and a pretty good season, and that's the second year in. So for me, our priority is to making sure that there's always opportunity and a continual growth. We're seeing that with water development and other things around the state. So it's really about us, Dairy Tas, providing the services that help support our farmers do what they do.
As you say, it's an absolutely fantastic time to be in dairy. What's the best way to take advantage of that situation?
So I think Tasmania in particular, we can tell that story. It's not the case always for some of our counterparts interstate, but dairy is a really positive story for the country. And I think for our farmers, it's really now, this is a good chance for them to take that time to reinvest into their business and sort out what their priorities are. It's much easier to do when you're having a good season versus the challenging times that we've seen over the years.
Of course, there is one big negative story at the moment. That's the situation at Van Dairy. How do you see that having an impact on the industry?
So it's obviously very topical. I know you've spoken about it a number of times on your program, and it's certainly topical in our dairy pavilion. A lot of our farmers are talking about that with us. But the regulator have a job to do, and they're doing that job. And my understanding is that that's being responded to. And that's our expectation. We expect that our industry respond to all of those needs. And that's, I think, what we're seeing happening now. But it's a good lesson for all of us, and it's certainly something we expect our industry to invest in our animals, in our environment, and make sure we have a sustainable practices.
And are your members buying that, with the regulators on the job, they're getting on with it and it's going to be fixed?
I believe so, yeah. We have to trust in that our regulators will do their job, and our farmers have regular contact with the things regulators like the Tasmanian Dairy Industry Authority, because they have regular audits and so they're aware of their requirements and they will respond as appropriate.
Now, over the ditch in New Zealand, we've seen concerns and public pressure about the sustainability of the industry be followed by a more tougher regulatory environment. Is that something we should be concerned about in Australia?
I think the experience in New Zealand is a good lesson for all of the dairy industry and agriculture more broadly, but we need to understand that the Tasmanian environment is somewhat different to New Zealand, but I think we also need to look to make sure that there's continual improvement at all times.
And as you said earlier, things are pretty good at the moment. There's plenty of opportunities for growth, but what are some of the obstacles standing in the way of the industry?
I think it's quite... I think there is always going to be some challenges depending on what the season is, what the milk price is, what the trade markets are doing. There's all of those things that all our farmers know could be challenges in the future, but that's why they plan, and that's some of the services that dairy provide, is to help people with that planning process.
And for now, good times ahead. Thank you very much for being on the Country Hour.
Thank you very much.
That was Laura Richardson, the new executive officer of Dairy Tas.
Fantastic. Thanks, Lockie. And it's just about 10 minutes past 12 here on the Country Hour live at Agfest.
Fiona Breen and Luke Bradford, live from Agfest on ABC Radio Hobart and across Tasmania.
Well, Lockie, the machinery shortage is a topic we've been following very closely, both on the Rural Report and the Country Hour, for quite a time now.
And it's particularly important at a day like AgFest, which is a huge sales event, but I guess some of those ongoing issues with freight are playing into it. In fact, we have Tony Brooks. He's the owner of Tasmac. You've had to call in a couple of favours this year.
Yes, we have, Lockie. So because of the high volume of machinery we've been selling in the last 12 months, we've obviously sold out of a lot of lines, and we've had to go back to farmers that we've sold units to and ask them to borrow them back to demonstrate, with show them at AgFest.
Because if you didn't do that, you wouldn't have enough display stock, I guess?
Well, we'd have limited display stock, so it was important that we have machinery there to show our customers, and that's how we had to do it this year.
And in terms of trying to get in those machines, are there particular products that are more affected than others?
No, most products right across the range are. Our construction side of the business has been pretty good because we direct ship that in from overseas. So, you know, a lot of planning ahead, and that hasn't been too bad. But products coming out of Melbourne, it's been a real challenge.
And what sort of lead time are we talking about here?
Every product's different, every line is different. So, you know, we can get the tractor, we have trouble getting the wheels, we have trouble getting the loaders. So there's quite often one part of the machine that we are struggling to get for 3-4 months.
And customers are here to snag a bargain at AgFest. What are they like when you say, look, I can sell you one today, but you might have to wait a little bit?
Customers are actually being really good. We're telling them it's, on some items, 2 to 3 months lead time, and they're happy with that.
And in terms of the farmers that you had to call up and say, can you help us out with your display model, are they pretty open to that?
Very, yeah, they help us out. They're really good. Yep.
Now, we've been hearing a lot about the freight constraints in the last 12 months. And to chat a little bit about some of the factors driving that, we've got Tim Finlade. He's the Territory Sales Manager. Welcome to the Country Hour.
Thank you.
So, for those who haven't been following this story, can you just break down what's sort of driving this issue with freight at the moment?
Yeah, sure. I guess in the last 12 months, since COVID first became a factor for us in Australia, the market really bounced back last year in 2020 after Easter, and we found our tractor and machinery industry really grow in 2020, which was a surprise to everybody. I think food security in the country, as well as rain, some government subsidies and things like that have really driven the market, and we've ended up being a fortunate industry where there is a lot of product flowing through to the country. But having said that, you know, there are factors that are happening at the manufacturing side of things overseas, and that might be some component shortages or temporary shutdowns due to COVID. Then the shipping lines around the world have also become extremely busy. So where we would ship a Kubota excavator from Japan previously in 2 weeks to Australia, it now looks like about 6 weeks, given the delays through ports as the machinery travels into our country.
So it's that combination of those two factors, that really high demand for product and some of the constraints in getting stock or parts in.
Absolutely.
Now, Tony Brooks from Tasmac, obviously this year at AgFest, we had limits on the crowd numbers. How are you seeing that play out in sales so far?
Look, it's affected us greatly. We're certainly not getting the numbers through our site. You know, the cost of the event doesn't change. It's actually more expensive this year because of the demand on marquees and things like that. Freight costs are well up. So, yeah, it has greatly affected our business this year.
We heard yesterday from organisers that people were being encouraged to dig deep, open up their wallets and, you know, spend a little extra. Are you seeing people happy to get out the chequebook?
They're certainly looking. We're doing a lot of quoting. And we're making quite a few sales. So, yeah, we'll make the best of a bad situation.
And are there any particular things people have their eyes on this year?
The zero-turn mowers are a big seller at AgFest. A lot of people looking at tractors. It's right across the range.
All right. Well, thanks so much for being on the Country Hour, Tony Brooks.
Thanks, Lockie.
Back to you, Luke.
Thank you very much, Lockie. And it's a wonderful day here at AgFest. The weather is, I'd say it's almost a little bit better than yesterday. It's just that little bit warmer and a little bit of cloud cover, so hopefully not as much chance of getting roasted as we did definitely get yesterday. If you want to pop down and see us at the ABC tent, Country Hour broadcasting here from 12 till 1, we're at M92, which is the corner of Main and North. But Fiona Breen, you've got someone.
I have. I've got Hayden Richardson. Now, he's a volunteer. You're just 15, I believe.
Yes, I am just 15.
So tell me, what have you been doing? What's your job here today?
So over the 4 days of AgFest and in the planning, I'm Assistant Features Manager. So we look after the animal nursery, equine area, 4x4, Central Arena and Heritage. So we just oversee the comings and goings of those, so they've got their own area coordinators.
And you're part of a family that's had a long involvement with AgFest, I believe.
Sure am. So my dad was in Devonport Club, my mum was in Brighton. That's actually how they met. They were both in it for a long time. And
so if it wasn't for AgFest, you wouldn't be here?
Probably not. No.
Well, look, thanks so much for volunteering and helping at this great event today. Thanks, Hayden Richardson, and catch you next AgFest.
No worries. And here we are once again on the Country Hour. It's just about, it's just gone 12:15, but now we're handing over to another member of the rural team. David Barnett-Clement is here. Good afternoon, David.
Hello, Luke. Yes, we were just talking about farming machinery and tractors, and obviously a really important aspect of that is staying safe when you're around tractors and machinery. And I'm joined by Philip John from Safe Farming Tasmania. Phil, you've had quite a busy AgFest, is that right?
Yeah, there's been a bit going on, David. Quite a deal of interest in the safety side of things, which is really, really pleasing to see.
Mm-hmm. Now, Safe Farmers Tasmania, I understand, has been doing a lot of work behind the scenes to get not just AgFest, but many agricultural festivals and shows up and running during COVID. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, well, at the announcement with the $1.9 million for the resilience package for the sector was a boost to Safe Farming. So I'm very lucky now to have a guy by the name of Stuart Beams, who's an ex-inspector, on board with me now, and Stu's been fantastic. So his primary role is to be working with organisations, and AgFest is a classic example. He's done a power of work in the background with the organisers to help them get over the line with the COVID plan.
Mm, so you used to be a one-man band, but your team's doubled in size. What's it like having another consultant on board?
Yeah, look, it's fantastic. I thought it might give me a breather. I might have a chance to have a holiday or something, but in fact it's gone the other way, which is brilliant, because you know, it just gives us that extra capacity to get out there and talk about the farm safety issues.
Yeah, does this COVID safety advice and assistance extend beyond AgFest and onto the farm?
Yes, it does. So one of the key focuses is to help farmers get COVID plans in place and do things to mitigate the COVID risks.
Mm. And tell me a little bit about kind of the mental health side of things. You were saying before that festivals, they have a really important social role in getting farmers and the community together and giving people a chance to have a chat. What's some of the anecdotal kind of evidence you've had of that?
Yeah, look, it's brilliant. We're strongly encouraging our rural ag shows to have a crack at running. Some of them were putting it in a too hard basket, but now with Stuart on board, we can physically work with them and encourage them to do that. And I guess the King Island shows, etc., are one of those classic examples.
Yeah, always good to have a chat, hey?
Absolutely.
Brilliant. Thank you. And that was Philip John from Safe Farming Tasmania. Back to you, Fiona.
Thank you, David. Now, from talking farm safety, we're going to go to a bit of fun. We've always got to be safe. So we're talking to Brian Heavey. He's with the Four Wheel Drive Association. You've got a pretty excellent exhibition here at AgFest, haven't you? It's a bit of fun.
Yeah, hi Fiona. Yes, we have. Four Wheel Drive Tasmania runs the Peter Brock Memorial Four Wheel Drive track for AgFest, and we've done that for 6 or 7 years now, so it's a good sort of working relationship, an opportunity for us to sort of show some skills.
Well, I've seen you taking people through a bit of a course, using all sorts of ropes and things to get themselves out. Are there any tips or tricks that you can give us?
Yes, well, today's really good, and all this week we'll be showing different winching techniques. So one that gets a few people in is the reversing, or using your winch to pull your vehicle backwards.
Using the winch, using a tree or something.
Yeah, two or three trees and a couple of snatch blocks, which are pulleys, and running the cable through it and actually using a bit of mechanical advantage, some of that physics we don't remember from school, to pull the vehicle backwards instead of forwards.
I see that you've got quite a bit of interest. Are there many? Obviously, there's lots of four-wheel drives out there. Do people know what they're doing?
Well, I guess anecdotally, some do, some don't. There's been a definite increase in the sale of new SUV vehicles.
Okay.
Bit of an American term, but yeah, the pendulum's actually swung. So there's more four-wheel drives, all-wheel drives, SUVs sold than there are family cars, if you like.
Really? And they're out in the country, they're in the city. Do they know how to use them?
Well, a lot do. It can be a bit of a temptation, I guess, to get an all-wheel drive vehicle, something that's good on gravel roads, a bit more sure-footedness. They tend to sit a bit higher, so people feel a bit safer and more secure when they're driving them. But if you want to get into the slightly more extreme stuff, vehicle recovery, winching and so on, then it's best to do a bit of training, and we can do that.
Or you can do that sort of thing. Yeah. Well, there's been some pretty interesting vehicles in that section, some huge tyres and things. Do you need all that gear?
Well, it depends what you want to do. Some of the more extreme guys do the more challenging tracks, and to do that it's all about having ground clearance, so bigger wheels will get your vehicle further off the ground. That means you're less likely to bump on rocks and things as you traverse over them. Also, they'll equip their vehicles with winches and lots of recovery gear and jack up the suspension. There's lots of things you can do. It's a bit like fishing or golf. You start off basic and you can just keep spending money day after day to get better at it and improve what you've got.
Is it a hobby or is it a sport?
Oh, that's a good question. I mean, guess it's
more... Or?
Oh, well, yes, some do, yeah. So I guess it's a hobby or a recreation is probably the best way to put it. So it can be single people, it can be couples, groups, families, whatever. So it's generally associated with another activity. So some people enjoy just four-wheel driving, but most people do it to get to a favourite fishing spot, maybe a hunting spot, and obviously on the land, farmers pretty much live in their four-wheel drives. So, it's pretty much a recreation, but there are a few competitions around that can be winching or technically based that some people are interested in too. That's more the extreme stuff, yeah.
It's a bit of fun either way. Yeah. Brian Heavey from the Four Wheel Drive Association has got a great exhibition here. Have a look, get some tips and tricks. Thanks for joining the Country Hour.
My pleasure. Thanks, Fiona.
Fiona Breen and Luke Radford, live from AgFest on ABC Radio Hobart and across Tasmania.
Where it's around about 21 minutes past 12. Couldn't get my tongue around that one. A lot of new faces here at AgFest today, and two of the newest are here with me right now. Obviously, we're looking at the next generation of stock handlers, and this afternoon we're joined by Lachlan Crawford from the Yolla District School. Hello, Lachlan.
G'day.
And Amy Willey from the Tasman District School. Hello, Amy.
Hi.
Guys, you've been in competition already today, but before we get on to that, can we find out a little bit about where you're from? Lachlan, what about you?
So I originally came from New South Wales. Moved down probably about 6 to 8 months ago and started in at Yolla and really enjoyed it and got into the showing. It's not the first time I've shown and judged. I did a little bit in New South Wales, but really enjoyed it and just followed it.
So from a farming family in New South Wales?
Yeah, we had quite a large property in New South Wales and just moved down to find a smaller one and with a bit more rain.
And Amy, what about you?
I come from down on the Tasman Peninsula, and for high school I went to Tasman District and I got involved in all their showing and the school farm, and it's been really great.
So are you a newcomer to agriculture?
Yeah, definitely.
Absolutely. So let's turn to what you've already done, because there was competition yesterday. Lachlan, I believe you actually won something.
So I got runner-up in the sheep judging for over 15-year-olds, and I got runner-up in the beef cattle judging in over 15-year-olds.
So walk us through that. Is that your first time doing the judging?
No, it's not the first time. I think it's the first win I've ever had. But, so just looking at the attributes of the animals and just comparing them between the two.
How did you find it? I've got to ask.
So it just sort of happened through school, looking after the school farm, and just went through from there.
Yeah, absolutely. Amy, turning to you, you were also competing. How did you... Well, did you enjoy it?
Oh, definitely, yeah. It went really well.
Yeah, so walk us through the competition you had yesterday. What was involved at a base level?
So you go into the ring and you just judge the animals with your opinion and stuff, and then afterwards you speak and tell the judges what your thoughts were, and then they judge you off that.
Yeah, fantastic. And then did you get any good feedback coming out of that?
Definitely, yeah. The judges, they come and chat to you afterwards and you can have a good word with them and they give you a fair bit of advice.
Do you think judging both for sheep and cattle is going to be something that you'll be looking forward to in the future?
It may be something that I follow, but it was one thing that really just depth in your knowledge in the just knowing what to look for in the animals, especially for farming. You want to have good genetics in stock. So get your breeding right.
So what are you looking to do once you finish school, Lachlan?
So I'll go on to TAFE and get into my Cert 3 in Ag, hopefully get that and look for jobs on farm.
And Amy, what about you?
Oh, I'm not quite sure. I guess I'll just work it out along the way.
The freeway of doing things. So obviously you've got more events coming up today. Lachlan, can you run us through what you're competing in?
So we've got the Young Farmers Challenge. So we've got groups of four and we will compete in tying fence knots, stacking hay bales. I think we've got to do a little bit of stock work and a few things like that. Just sort of basic farmhand knowledge.
Mm. And is there another event on as well today, Amy?
No, we've already had the team of threes for sheep and cattle. So yeah, it's just the young farmers left.
All right, fantastic. Well, guys, thank you for being with us on the Country Hour today. Best of luck with wherever you go coming up next, and good luck with the Young Farmers Challenge later today.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys. And for now, it's off to the newsroom with David Barnett-Clement.
Good afternoon, Luke. The death of a Tasmanian man from a post-operative infection has been described by a coroner as entirely avoidable. 56-year-old Graham Charles Davis died 2 weeks after having surgery at the Launceston General Hospital in 2018. The coroner found Mr. Davis suffered an infection while in hospital, but was given antibiotics too late to help. A woman whose partner is an inmate at Risdon Prison says tension has been mounting for weeks due to overcrowding and a lack of rehabilitation services. Police and tactical units had to be sent to the prison last night after inmates set cells alight in the facility's medium security wing. Prime Minister Scott Morrison has welcomed a move by the United States to waive intellectual property rights for COVID-19 vaccines. President Joe Biden has confirmed the US is throwing its support behind the initiative at the World Trade Organization. And more than 200 global organisations are urging the United Nations Security Council to impose an arms embargo on Myanmar in response to the ongoing military coup. A statement by the non-governmental organisation says the time for statements has passed and immediate action is needed to help protect peaceful protesters against military rule. And more news at 1.
Thank you, David. And that was David Barnett-Clement, our rural reporter, having a go at news. And no, David, you cannot go to the news department. You're part of the rural team. But thank you for doing that today at AgFest. We're the Country Hour. Time now for a check with weather. And we've got Deb Tabor here at AgFest with us. This is going to make things run a lot more smoothly, Deb.
A bit easier today, not me in Hobart and you up here.
Exactly.
So I can hear the going on around me and what you're dealing with today.
Exactly. And there's so much going on, isn't there? Helicopters in the air, people around. People were interested in how we put the program to air, which is nice.
Yeah, definitely. A lot of action, a lot to see, and just amazing weather. So everyone's pretty happy and, you know, every stall, lots of things to look at. It's great.
Yeah, from here it doesn't, I can't tell the impact of a cap on numbers. I don't know if you've sort of walked around a bit. Have you noticed much?
Just had a look a little bit around, and I guess there's a lot of room to move, which is nice.
Which is quite nice, isn't it? Yeah. Well, we should get to the weather. Has there been any rainfall?
Not a lot. So up to 9 a.m. this morning, we had Matsaika Island report 4 millimetres and Queenstown Low Rocky Point 3. And then since 9 a.m, nothing in the gauge. So a nice day for the state until some showers develop this afternoon.
Okay. And what about the outlook?
Okay, so for today we've got a high that's moved near New Zealand, extending a ridge over Tasmania. We'll see showers develop through the north and the east in the afternoon. Mainly looks like around the northwest tiers and the northeast coast. So up around St Helens area, a few millimetres through there and a few millimetres through the northwest tiers. Otherwise, should be quite a nice day here in AgFest. For Friday, we'll see a northeast to northwesterly flow. Showers about the north, so dampening more into the not so much mud, but a little bit of shower activity for AgFest here and through the northern half of Tasmania into central areas, with some light showers developing in the west during the afternoon. So a few places in the north we'll see around 5 to 15 millimetres, but mostly fine across the rest of the state. Cold front to cross in the afternoon on Saturday, so some showers through the west and developing in the north. Some light afternoon showers elsewhere, and we'll see a north to northwesterly stream freshen and then shift cooler west to southwesterly in the afternoon, fairly strong in the south. So around 5 to 15 millimetres expected through the west, but less than 2 for the rest of the state. Sunday starting to get a little bit more interesting. Northwesterly winds strengthening on Sunday, so showers through the west, the north and central areas, but mainly fine the rest of the state. Only light showers through the west and around 2 millimetres expected there. Sunday night starting to get very windy and into Monday morning. So that'll be the windiest. We've seen the coldest days really in the last week, I guess, with several frost warnings out. But the windy day will be Sunday night and into Monday morning as a cold front crosses in the afternoon. And then we'll see the colder air come through. Some snow to lower levels expected on Monday, but the main feature will be the wind, very strong, and rain statewide. So hopefully some getting through to the east, which is well needed, and around 20 to 30 millimetres for the west and the far south, and 5 to 15 millimetres for northern and central areas.
Are there any warnings, Deb?
We are warning free for today, but we've got a strong wind warning for the southeast coast tomorrow.
What about coastal waters?
Okay, for the rest of today, east to northeasterly winds 10 to 20 knots, but a variable inshore about the west, and winds will reach 25 knots about the northwest and southeast this evening. For tomorrow, we go around to a northerly stream, 10 to 20 knots, reaching 25 knots about the east and the west, and 30 knots through the southeast. The wave buoys at Cape Sorrel at around midday reported 3.4 metres with a maximum of 5 and a period around 14 seconds. Mariah Island buoy 1.3 metres with a maximum of 2.3 and a period of 13 seconds. So the swells are on their way down. In the western south, we can expect a southwest swell around 3.5 to 4 metres, lowering to 2 to 3 metres tomorrow. In the north, we'll see a low swell, but it will tend northeasterly tomorrow, around 1 metre. And about the east, a southerly around 1 metre, grading to 2 to 3 metres in the south. But also a northeasterly swell building to 1 to 2 metres today in the east and 2 to 3 metres tomorrow.
Okay, Deb Tabor, thanks so much for joining us at the Country Hour. So great to see you in person.
No worries, Fiona. Beautiful day here.
Isn't it fabulous?
Great to be part of it. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. And some beautiful sunshine. I hope you have fun walking around Eggfest.
We'll do. Make the most of today, and then we'll enjoy some different weather tomorrow.
Hello, everyone. H.G. Nelson here with a quick reminder that Bludging on the Blind Side is ABC Grandstand's highlight. Noon on Saturdays, I'll be there with rampaging Roy Slaven. Roy, what can the public expect?
Well, Rugby League is fiddling with the rules of Rugby League. The public should be consulted. The only show that consults the public is the public show, Bludging on the Blind Side.
Yes, if you want football drivel loud and clear.
Bludging on the Blind Side, back on your radio Saturdays from midday and on the ABC Listen app.
And now we're joined by Therese Taylor. Therese, you're from the Forestry, Tas Forest Network.
Tasmanian Forests and Forest Products Network, Fiona.
And thanks for joining us at Agfest. We're here on a beautiful day and you've got a tent here with a few different organisations, and I think that's part of your role, is bringing organisations together from the forestry industry. Is that right?
Yes, that's exactly right, Fiona. The network was established by the industry approximately 2 years ago as an umbrella organisation to foster collaboration and cohesion within the industry. We act as a linkage point and a central communication hub for the industry.
Because there's so many different groups, isn't
there? Yes.
So you're talking about private companies as well as Sustainable Tasmania, or...?
That's right. The supply chain, obviously, in the forest industry, when you think about it, goes from nurseries and what's happening in nurseries and seed germination right through to people designing in, you know, beautiful Tasmanian timber and beautiful furniture. So, and there's everything in between. There's the harvesting of that, the haul, the transporting, the processing. So those sectors were always very active, but the network is designed to actually value add to the industry by getting the industry to work better together.
So people have been, or organised, or groups have been working in silos as such. Is this giving you a better voice in the community, or...?
Well, we believe it has, and I think, you know, organisations, we can always do better together than we can separately. And over the last 2 years, it's a member-driven organisation, the network, and it's free to join. We had about 1,000 members. So I think the time was right for the industry to say it's a... it's one of the backbones of the Tasmanian economy, the forest industry. And we've got challenges going into the future, especially around supply of timber. And by working together, we'll be able to, you know, address a lot of that demand that will go into the future with better workforce skills, attracting the right people, those sorts of issues.
Because you do hear a little bit now about there's just not enough timber for builders at the moment.
That's correct. Even before the supply issue became as urgent as it has been, Australia did import a lot of its building frame timber from overseas. So the supply issue has been around for quite a while. There's a lot of research happening in the industries now about growing better trees, more of them in the same amount of land with faster rotations, and also encouraging farmers to get into tree production. It is a crop, and there's a lot of work being done by Private Forest Tasmania for farmers to actually add to that supply.
So a lot of tech involved in that, no doubt. Well, that brings me, I'm going to segue here to Rais Taylor. Stay with us just in case we come back to you. And one of the members from your network is Mike Ross. He's with
Indicium Dynamics.
Indicium Dynamics. Now, people out there might not know what that means, but I do know it's something to do with tech and quite a bit of really interesting tech. And one of the things that I saw you do, and I had a look at your display yesterday, was put Big Brother cameras up where the eagles sit.
Yes, so one of the projects we've been working with the industry, forestry industry, is the Eagle Eye project. So we're monitoring eagles' nests with cameras and sensors to try and understand how they breed better and understand when the nests are active or not.
Okay, so how are you working out where to put them and why?
So there is a survey regularly done to find nests around Tasmania. And for the forestry industry, they have an exclusion zone around the nests where they are not allowed to operate. So during the breeding season from June through to January or February, they're not allowed to work near those nests. So they need to check if the nests are active or not. So we've found a subset of the nests to run a trial on, and we've installed these sensors.
What do you mean a subset? You've found a group of trees where eagles, you know, eagles are?
In a single area where we know there's a, you know, 50 or so nests. We've chosen a subset of those to conduct a trial.
So someone climbed up that tree and put a camera?
We had to have a tree climber climb up the tree and install the equipment. So it's about a half-day job per tree.
Yeah, so how high can some of these go?
They could be a couple 100 metres above the ground or more. It depends on the tree. We have installed some on rock faces as well for sea eagles. But, yeah, for forestry, it's normally quite high up a tree.
Okay, well, fascinating tech. And I suppose you're just putting more in forests around the place so you know where to avoid harvesting.
Yeah, so if they know what nests are active and which ones aren't, and they can manage their forestry practices better, make sure that they're not disturbing the eagles, letting them get on with business of producing new eagles.
Now, you're involved with a whole heap of other tech as well, helping irrigators or, what are these, farmers? Or is this deliver water at a more efficient, I suppose, and low-cost way?
Yeah, so we've just completed a project last year for Parkshire Council in New South Wales.
So parks, yeah, parks, it's dry out
the
there.
It's very dry and they were just going through a really big drought.
They need to keep an eye on their water.
So they've had a new recycled water scheme set up, which takes their their dirty water, their sewage and so forth, and cleans that up so it's clean enough to irrigate onto sports fields and into parks and gardens around the town.
So how's the tech? Simply, so we can all understand, how does your tech help them with that?
So they originally investigated using traditional sort of control equipment, but the cost of doing that was prohibitive. So they turned to the Internet of Things and newer style of technology to do that control aspect and to produce a system that's user-friendly enough that people can use it without training.
Okay, fantastic. Mike Ross, thanks so much for joining us. Therese Taylor from the Tas Forest Network, thanks for joining the Country Hour.
Thanks, Fiona.
Thank you, Fiona.
I'm going to hand over to Luke Radford. Who has someone from the crowd there?
I do. As we've said on the Country Hour, we've been highlighting a few of the people that have been making AgFest possible for the last little while. And one of those people is Chris Wicks, who's the Environmental Health Officer with the Meander Valley Council. Chris, welcome to the Country Hour.
It's a great pleasure to be here, Luke.
Fantastic. So, Chris, you've got a bit of an interesting job. You know, COVID makes things much more tricky, as we've heard, but you're inspecting the food stalls and vendors to make sure they're all up to scratch.
We do, Meander Valley Council. I'm part of an environmental health team, and we do place a lot of importance on food safety. One of our jobs, of course, is to taste all of the food, and that's probably the hardest part of our job. We get to lunch and we've just had so much delicious food we don't know where to go next. On a serious note, the food stall holders are very diligent. We have a good rapport with them, and we've enjoyed our job here at AgFest. It is a pleasure to be here, and we do eat a lot of food.
I can imagine. Well, what kinds of things have you seen? Is there anything out of the ordinary?
Well, I think AgFest in itself is a little out of the ordinary. It's a bit like a food safari. And around every corner there's something a little bit different and some innovative people with innovative foods. We find that always interesting, everlastingly so. Nothing specific. It would be unfair of me to pick out any individual food business. But I can say the standard is very good. It's very nice, and it's a very enjoyable safari for us to be on. And we do work very hard, of course.
Of course. All right, Chris, thanks for being with us on the Country Hour.
Great pleasure. Thank you, Luke.
Back to you, Fiona.
It's the Tasmanian Country Hour, live and on location at AgFest. You're with Fiona Breen and Luke Radford on ABC Radio Hobart and ABC Northern Tasmania.
And thanks for joining the Country Hour. It's a beautiful day here at AgFest, and we've got so many interesting different people to interview here. Now I'm with Sam Sawyer, who's from the Tasmanian Institute of Agriculture. Welcome to the Country Hour.
Hello, thanks for having me.
Now, I think you said before, I'm going to try and not speak too fast, but
I'm trying.
But you're nice and relaxed, aren't you?
Okay, let's go in that one.
Let's go. Okay, now you work in food quality and some really interesting parts of food quality. Microwave assisted thermal
sterilisation.
Oh my goodness. And we said
Mats for short.
We said we were going to make this interesting, didn't we? Now, this is, we've all heard about freeze dried food. You go bushwalking, you get that sort of food. Often it's a bit average, isn't it? And you're doing sort of the next step up in technology. So tell us a little bit about that.
So, microwave-assisted thermal sterilisation, or MATS for short, is basically using heat and microwave to rapidly sterilise food. So compared to, say, traditional retorting where it's heated for ages to be sterile, this is only a few minutes. And so it does retain fresh flavours and fresh textures. And so compared to things like freeze-dried food, it tastes like food that you cooked at home.
So is it a lot lighter as well?
It has the same
carry,
weight.
If you want to carry, or the same weight as fresh food.
So it has the same weight of fresh food, but the difference is that it's shelf stable, so it can be stored at room temperature. So compared to fresh food that has the short use by date because it has to be stored in the fridge, or frozen food which has to be stored in the freezer, then this can last for, or Matt's sterilised food can last for over a year.
So what's the advantages, do you think? Can you see, I know you're involved in the science and quality assurance, but what can you see are the advantages to maybe the industry or out there in the public?
What's particularly interesting is that the fact that you don't have to rely on the cold chain. So, for example, we're in Tassie, we're on an island, so trying to get produce and trying to get food and meals off island can be quite difficult because of that supply chain. So being able to send it off island at room temperature in normal delivery services is actually quite a huge advantage that we can provide.
Now, I remember talking to Professor Roger Stanley, I think, a few years ago, and he was talking about this machine. It was coming in the future, and it was his baby, I think. So it's pretty exciting. It hasn't been going for that long, and lots of trials going on.
Yeah, so there's lots of trials around that. So this is a lot of the research is in collaboration with Defence and the CSIRO. So now we're moving into the next stages, which is where I come into it, which is of being able to quantify quality.
Measure quality.
Measure
taste,
quality,
smell?
Taste and smell, the textures, and also just to look at things like spoilage and food safety to make sure that we're complying with all of that as well as we move forward and open this technology up to new partners and people who can now create or can now sterilise their products.
Measuring taste. That's an interesting concept, isn't it? But I suppose that means you don't actually have to taste it.
Well, and that's where the ethics come into it, where normally when you're tasting food or looking at the sensory quality of it, you get a sensory panel. So you get a panel of people and you train them to be able to taste food, and then that's what you give to them. So as well as having the cost involved and taking away people's time, it's also the food safety part. If you're not sure if some food is safe, you can't feed that to people.
No.
And this is where having instruments...
That could be problematic.
Yeah. Having instruments that can actually measure that for us.
Okay. Sam Sawyer from the Tasmanian Institute of Agriculture. Stay with us. That, thank you for telling us all about that. Now, I know you dragged along one of your colleagues here to talk a little bit about 3D printing food. Samantha Lester from the Tasmanian Institute of Agriculture. 3D printing food.
Yes.
Are we talking about the future? Is this space age?
We are talking about sci-fi come to life. So over at the UTAS Mile Truck, we have our food printer. We've got two 3D food printers at UTAS, and we've brought one along today to show everyone what it can do and talk to them a little bit about that technology and sort of just give everyone a bit of an insight as to where the technology is headed.
So can you sort of go, print me some mayonnaise or print me a loaf of bread, or how does it work?
It's not quite that advanced yet, just yet. So I'm actually a designer, a design student. So my job is to design things that can be printed out of food, and then pretty much anything that's extrudable, just meaning that it can be pushed through a tube, can be made into a 3D design.
What sort of things have you been playing around with?
So today we've brought along some icing. So we're just doing some pretty groovy designs in the icing. But in the lab, we've also been working with cookie dough and I think mashed potato as well. So just a few of the things that we've been using. And we're looking to move toward prototyping a vegan meat substitute over the next coming weeks and into next semester.
There'll be a lot of interest in that. So is this part of your particular research?
So my particular focus is about food and design as a growing industry of food design as an intersecting new sector. So that's where my focus is for my research.
Yeah. Oh, fantastic. Samantha Lester from the Tasmanian Institute of Agriculture. And Sam Sawyer, from the Tasmanian Institute of Agriculture, thank you for joining us on the Country Hour.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Over to you, Luke Radford.
Thank you very much, Fiona. Well, with all kinds of interesting and wonderful things at AgFest, there are livestock about the place. But if you're looking for livestock, there is some livestock up in the backhand corner that is a little bit out of the ordinary in many ways, or at least in Tasmania. With me right now is Craig McSwain from Craggy Island Highlands. Craig, welcome to the Country Hour.
Thanks, Luke. Nice to be here.
I've got to ask, the first question, something that has been bugging me for years, is it coos or cows when you talk about Highlands?
If you're in Scotland, coos, definitely. In Australia, it's more cows.
Is it a faux pas to say a cow?
No, not really. We accept both.
All right. Well, obviously you're showing off Highland cows right now. I've got to ask, is it very common in Tasmania?
Look, there's a fair few cattle in Tasmania. They were quite popular sort of back in the early to mid 80s, but they have dropped off a little bit since then, but we're seeing a little bit of a resurgence now.
How's demand?
Demand is sky high, not just in Tasmania but across the country. We can't keep up with demand for good quality breeding stock.
What's driving that?
Look, I think a number of things. I think the exposure of the breed, a lot of people have been doing a lot of work to get the breed out there. I think a refocus on small farm holdings has helped as well. And also, I think COVID, post-COVID, we've seen an increase in demand, definitely. I think people are sort of reassessing where they are with their whole work-life balance and getting back to some small hobby farming type sectors.
Now, aside from selling things across the Tasmanian market, you're bringing in stock to breed as well to change your herd.
Yeah, correct. Yeah, we're on our third bull from the mainland, so we're very keen to improve the lines or the bloodlines in Tasmania. So we have AI available to us, but we have brought in three bulls. We're on our third bull now. He's just landed 2 weeks ago from South Australia. And we've also imported a few heifers over the last few years as well.
So what are you breeding for in particular?
Look, our biggest thing is temperament. Obviously, Highland cattle have a big set of horns on them, so temperament's number one. And then we're also now looking at improving just the general characteristics from a traditional Highland perspective, so a short, stocky breed that does really well on unimproved pasture, so they're happy to work for their feed. They're sort of our aims as a breeder.
So has that been mainly bred out of the lines here in Australia?
The temperament is, you can still get some temperament issues, but most breeders are doing the right thing temperament-wise. So, yeah, we're on the right track there as a breed.
Yeah. Now, you're also the state rep for the Highland Cattle Society, aren't
yep,
you?
Yep. So we have an Australian Highland Cattle Society. We have approximately 170 members across the country and about a dozen or so in Tasmania. So, yeah, I am the local state rep for the society.
So what exciting things are happening with the society this year?
We usually have an annual show on the mainland somewhere, but this year, due to COVID, we've actually gone online for the first time. And that's really good. That's opening it up to people that haven't showed their cattle before, including Tasmanians. So this year we'll be able to compete against the national breeders, which will be really good.
So is that the first time that Tasmania's ever been involved?
I believe so, at a national level.
Wow.
I think, yeah, there may have been one or two like a long time ago, but definitely it gives us a chance to hopefully represent strongly for the state.
Yep, and that's coming up in July,
it
I believe?
It is in July, in mid-July. Yeah, that's correct.
Yep. So if you're interested, where should you keep an eye on things?
There is a webpage for the Australian Highland Cattle Society. If you just look that up on your search engine, you'll find it, but you should be able to watch that live.
All right, no worries, Craig. Well, we'll check back in with you around July to find out how that went.
That would be great.
Thanks for being with us today.
Fantastic.
On the Country
Thanks
Hour.
Thanks for your time, Luke. Thanks.
Where it's about 10 minutes to one.
Hi, Heather Hewitt here. Join me for Back Roads as we travel to the more remote towns and regions of Australia, from Cobar to Cloncurry.
Really good life, really.
Strawn to Cooper Pedy, and many more in between.
There are sand, there's dust, there's lots of flies, there's very large mosquitoes.
We discover all that magnificent rural and regional Australia has to offer and celebrate the amazing people living life just off the back roads of Australia.
Back Roads, Thursday nights at 8 on ABC TV and streaming on iView.
And you're with the ABC Rural team here at AgFest on the second day of AgFest. And of course, we've got 4 days of AgFest this year. A little bit different after going to the cloud last year because of COVID. I'm joined by Owen Woolley, who's in charge of security and some of the logistics at AgFest. So a little bit more to look after this year than when you're in the cloud.
Very much so, Fiona. So it's been a bit of a logistical exercise the last couple of days, trying to get our head around how the whole COVID check-in and then our ticket scanning process has been, but we're definitely fine-tuning the process.
How are the crowds going with that? Are they all doing the right thing, checking in with the TAS app? And
yes, very much so. The crowds and exhibitors have been in full support and understanding of the processes that we've got to go through to run this year's event.
I know one thing I was thinking about, and this is where your security hat comes in. Last night when I accidentally left my computer here in the tent, I was thinking, uh-oh, is someone keeping an eye on things through the night?
Very much so. There's a very dedicated team of 13 guards during the day roaming and monitoring our site, and then we've got about 10 on site at night. So the site is covered very well.
So I was safe. I know we closed it up, but I did leave a bit of gear here, and it was safe, looked after by Owen Woolley and your team. Just having the sanitizer and having to think about all that social distancing stuff, that's probably just added to your jobs?
Very much so. So we've got a dedicated list of roles for the throughout the year, and then with our COVID plan to have this year's event, I think the plan generated another 48 volunteers that we required to operate our event as a COVID-safe event.
Just so, that bit extra.
Yeah, it was quite a head-scratcher of how we're going to make it all come together, but we pulled through and, yeah, it's just going well.
Another thing I was thinking about was just the amount of tents and things. I mean, who puts all those up and how long does that take? How many do you have?
Oh, many marquees would be here. They'd be well and truly into the 500 thereabouts. But so as of March, the site starts to be prepared with marking the lines where all the marquees go. And then at the start of April, marquee companies, they're contracted out by our exhibitors.
They have to put the tents up. You're not sort of doing it all yourselves.
No, we don't. We've got a lovely list of marquee companies that put out to tender to put all the marquees up for our exhibitors. So, yeah, literally from the 1st of April till 6 o'clock the night before AgFest, the marquee companies are putting up tents.
And bringing in animals and things like that, I mean, there just must be a few logistics in who can come in when, etc.
Very much so, yes. We've got to time trucks and vehicles just to make sure that we're not going to congest our streets too much so everyone can get in and out and get what they need done in a time-efficient manner.
Okay, Owen Woolley, security AgFest legend. Thank you for joining the Country Hour and good luck over the next couple of days. We've had good weather so far, so I'm crossing fingers that that continues.
Likewise. Thank you for your time, Fiona.
Over to you, Luke Radford.
Fiona Breen and Luke Radford, live from AgFest on ABC Radio Hobart and across Tasmania.
Where it's almost the end of the show. Wrapping up, we've only got about 5 minutes left here, but I'm joined by someone very special, I've got to say. We've seen a lot of new faces today, but someone who is an AgFest veteran is Amy Grubb, who's the Vice President of the Tasmanian branch of the Australian Stock Horse Association. She's showing stock horses and she's here with us today. G'day, Amy. Welcome to the Country Hour.
Thanks very much, Luke.
So let's start on the Australian Stock Horse because it's a special anniversary this year.
It is. It's the 50th anniversary of the breed being officially announced as a breed. Like, the horse has been around since military times. They served in the war and they were incredibly renowned for their performance in military operations. But it's only been 50 years ago that they actually set up a breed society, set up breed standards. And we're celebrating that 50-year anniversary this year.
I suppose for anyone that may not be familiar with the Australian Hawk Horse, what are some of the standards that are really enforced in breeding these animals?
So the major thing is temperament. It's got to be a horse that can do everything. So the horses that I've got out here today are a really good example. So my 8-year-old son can take them to Pony Club on the weekend, and then they can also play A-grade polo cross all season, and they're the horses we use around the farm for stock work. They've got to be incredibly versatile.
And also, you were saying with the temperament, well, you rode them down this main street we're standing on right now the other day, helicopters buzzing around, goodness knows how many people, and Solon is a lamb.
I know, and she's only 5. So that dear little mare, Ivy, she's a 5-year-old, her first big event, and I don't think she even blinked. But that's the lovely thing about the breed and why they're so trustworthy and why they've just become an icon of the Australian culture.
So alongside it being the 50th anniversary, you're breeding stock horses, obviously. What's demand like?
The demand, we cannot keep up. We would get a call, oh gosh, every week. And we're a small breeder, so we bought a stallion at... There's a lot of very key sales around Australia, and we bought a stallion back in 2012 from the Dalby sales, and we've been breeding a couple of horses every year, and we could sell them, gosh, 8 times over every time.
Absolutely. So why is that going up? What do you think?
I think a lot of the non-traditional sports like camp drafting and polo cross, a lot of those sports which are very family-orientated sports, and also, unlike traditional pony club, a lot of men are competing in them, and so at polo cross, for example, there'd be 100 polo cross players, and a lot of them are families, and just as many men as women, which is interesting. And so sports are growing like that. Camp drafting's got the highest prize money of any horse sport in Australia.
Wow.
I know, and they all ride Australian stock horses.
Fair enough. Is there any demand for them in a working capacity?
Absolutely. So, for example, most of the major feedlots around the world, and especially in Australia, use stock horses because they're very calm on stock. They have beautiful animal welfare outcomes because horses, you know, are calm and they're responsive. And so we use them. Our farm's a bit rough in areas. My husband and I are based at Bradawin. And so there's areas of our farm we couldn't get to if it wasn't for horses.
So turning to the hat that you wear as the head of the vice president, sorry, of the Tasmanian branch of the Australian Stock Horse Association, stock horse sale is coming up later this year. When is that?
We've got our stock horse show. Our stock horse show. So Ian Hyde, who's our president, has done an amazing job getting our show bigger than ever. And it's the first weekend in November, held in conjunction with the Westbury show. And it's on the Friday. And you'll see huge number of competitors. There'll be children riding their stock horses through to adults, and there'll be stallions, and it's a great turnout, and it's a bit of fun because it's not just trotting around in pretty circles. There's speed events, there's obstacle courses, and there's a bit of yee-haw in it as well, so it's great fun day.
A bit of yee-haw.
Absolutely.
All right, Amy. Well, thanks for being with us here on the Country Hour. And if anyone wants to come and see you doing polo cross demonstrations, when are they?
So we are, I think we're on at 2:30, and then I think we might be in the main arena around 3:30, 4 o'clock as well. I'm a bit loose on that timing, aren't I?
The main arena. All right, Amy Grubb, thanks for being with us today on the Country Hour. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Luke. It's been lovely.
And we're almost out of time here on the Country Hour. We've got about a minute and a half to go until the next lot of ABC News. Fiona Breen. We're almost done.
I know. What a show. So much in the show today. And we've had David Barnock-Clement. Thanks for joining us as our new rural reporter out here at AgFest. How have you found it?
Yeah. Well, it's been quite the experience. I'm pretty new to rural and reporting in general. So it's been quite a learning curve. But yeah, fantastic atmosphere. I think everyone's had a good time.
And don't forget, tomorrow we're actually doing what we call a live window. So about 20 minutes from the program, or from AgFest tomorrow, into the show, which will be hosted by Tony Briscoe back in Hobart. I know we're going to talk to the Tasmanian Food Company tomorrow and Jane Bennett. Anything else?
Oh, we'll have to see what's coming up. But we will be here, so please do check in. Come back and see us. It's been an absolute pleasure to be here at AgFest, and we'll see you all soon.
Catch the Country Hour at noon tomorrow.